This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So his process was in working with students was interesting because he would take watercolor paper and soak it overnight. And my wife does watercolor, and I can begin to imagine from what I hear from her is that she, you know, how challenging that might be, you know. Anyway, so the next, so when the students show up, they're placed in front of a piece of this watercolor, and he has, you know, different, you know, like four different colors within reach. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Taishin and Jerome. And then he blindfolds them. And they see what emerges on the paper with the painting. The first time his wife experienced that, you know, she, as a young person, as a child, she was a gifted, pretty gifted artist, but her father said, no, you can't do that. And so as an adult, when she first painted something, she was found it pretty disappointing. And then she did this process with Svargo, you know, and it opened her up. She saw, you know, what had the past effort had been some idea of what a painting should be, how, you know, what it should look like, and this broke her free from that. And that's my sense of this practice. And that painting caught my eye because, as we'll get into in a couple of days, what's going on with this? What's going on in our practice that, you know, appreciating this organism and what's happening, what's changing. So this quote from the Buddha, through many births I have wandered on and on, searching for, but never finding, the builder of this house. To be born again and again is suffering. House builder, you are seen. You will not build a house again. All the rafters are broken, the ridge poles destroyed. The mind, gone to the unconstructed, has reached the end of craving. So I'm going to offer up these quotes just as sort of reference points of going back, reference points for us, sort of a touch that we keep in touch with. The Paticca Samuppada, the dependent arising, this existing that exists, this arising that arises, this not existing that no longer exists, this ceasing that ceases. And then another quote from the Buddha, two more quotes from the Buddha. By and large, Kacchana, this world relies on the duality of it is and it is not. But one who sees the arising of the world as it happens with complete understanding has no sense of it is not about the world. And one who sees the ceasing of the world as it happens with complete understanding has no sense of it is about the world. And I was kind of in the middle of the night, I was thinking about this next quote, and I realized that yesterday I left, I forgot Bahia. What happened to Bahia in my talk? So this experience, this situation was that, you know, one day the Buddha was setting out on his begging rounds, and Bahia, a longtime, you know, mendicant practitioner, came up to the Buddha and he said, "Please tell me the secret to awakening." And the Buddha said, "No, you know, I'm busy. I'm about ready to go on my alms rounds here, so maybe another time." And then Bahia persisted, you know, saying, "Life is short. Please tell me." And the Buddha says, "I'm busy. I gotta go on my rounds here." And then third time. And so the Buddha stopped and he said this: "This is how you should train, Bahia. In what is seen, let there be just the seen. In what is heard, let there be just the heard. In what is sensed, let there be just the sensed. In what is cognized, let there be just the cognized. Then, Bahia, you will not be in that. When you are not in that, there is no you there. When there is no you there, then you are neither here nor there nor in between. This, just this, is the end of suffering." So that echoes that first quote. House builder, you've been seen. The mind has gone to unconstructed, has reached the end of craving. The end of craving is the end of suffering. And then I always like to throw this out here from Bodhidharma. If you use your mind to study reality, you won't understand either your mind or reality. If you study reality without using your mind, you'll understand both. Those who don't understand don't understand understanding. And those who understand, understand not understanding. And from the poet Audre Lorde, "The master's tools will never dismantle the master's house." For me, the Buddha's statement, "By and large, Kachana, the world relies on the duality of it is and it is not," it's an invitation in. Simply, you know, it's inviting us in to see what's really happening, to see into the complexity of existence. This existing, that exists, this arising, that arises, this not existing that no longer exists, this ceasing that ceases. Just reflect a moment on what's happening even right now with that. The system taking in this voice. How it's registering, the words that you're hearing. Notice what's going on, you know, in your system. Do you feel some type of resistance coming up? Maybe some boredom? Maybe a little bit of curiosity? Just notice that. What's coming up right now? As we're going to see, you know, looking into the complexity. This indigenous guy from Australia, Tyson Yunkaporta, indigenous academic writer, in his book Sand Talk, talks about the difference between complicated and complexity. There's a difference. And you see what, you know, and he goes on to point out what happens when we think something is complicated, and then we turn into the sense of complexity. He says, what happens when we think something is complicated? We're trying to solve something. We're trying to come up with an answer. To clamp down. It is, or it is not. When we're invited into the complexity, we're invited into the flow. To be awake and alive in the flow. So we just touched on what's arising now, but we have, you know, there's a lot of other stuff happening too. Arising, falling away, causes and conditions. Sort of to keep us awake, to keep us alive. To really be curious. I think that's a key aspect of this practice, is curiosity. And I think that one of our problems is that we're pretty incurious. Because we go, oh, okay. I got it figured out. That's what this is. I've got you figured out. And you're saying, yeah, right. But you see, and there's another dynamic happening there. It's this self and othering going on. The space begins, even if I don't say anything, I've got you figured out. You see, the space, this separation is happening. I've just objectified you. So when I was thinking about this quote from the Buddha about the house builder, I've been working with this book, After Buddhism by Stephen Batchelor, and as I share that, sometimes when I'm, especially with seasoned practitioners, and I mention the book After Buddhism, the door shuts, the window closes. So it's this automatic thing that happens. But it's worth the while. I really, you know, in my way, you know, it's not the most systematic, but I'm very interested in the early teachings in the Pali Canon. And seeing where things came from. Okay, and getting some degree of clarity about that as much as I can. And After Buddhism has helped me with that. And the quote about, you know, the world relying on the duality of it is and it is not came from there. And then I'm thinking, okay, there was a key aspect of this house builder, tearing down the house and stuff, is about self, right? Basically, when we're talking about the house, we're talking about self. And the Buddha says, again, in this, it's another echo, they're echoing back and forth, this is how you should practice bahiya. When there is cognition, let there be just cognition, etc., then you will not be in that. Bhikkhus, the Buddha says, the body rupa is not self. If it were, it would not get sick. You could tell your body, be like this, or don't be like that. But because the body is not self, it does get sick. You can't tell it, be like this or don't be like that. And then Batchelor, he points out that the same is true of feelings, perceptions, inclinations, and consciousness. You cannot determine in advance how you will feel, what you will perceive, how you will be inclined to act, or what you will be conscious of. You do not choose to feel happy rather than sad, to perceive a world that delights rather than disturbs you, to always incline to a calm rather than an agitated response, to be unconscious rather than conscious of something distressing. In other words, you are not in charge of what is going on within your own experience. But then, he also says, although Buddhism says a great deal about the mind, it says hardly anything about the self or person who is conscious, who feels, perceives, intends, attends, and thinks. This is largely, I suspect, because anatta is misinterpreted as no self, which has led to a reluctance to think of the self as anything more than a concept or a convention. Embodied attention to the characteristics of anatta means that when one examines the five bundles, one finds that they are devoid of any mark or trace of self. Such an analysis has led to the unjustified conclusion that while the bundles themselves possess a degree of realness because of the physical and mental processes are observable, the self that undergoes them is a fiction, an illusion. And then, at another point, somebody asks him, is there a self? And he doesn't answer. So what's going on? Are we back to the world relies on the duality of it is and it is not? So when I say invited into the complexity, it's, you know, it's what happens is, you know, like I said before, the mind stops when it has an answer. Or, you know, with certain language, when we say, oh, there's no self. And does the door shut? Do we stop examining? And then what happens? According to Batchelor, the sense of no self set up this long process of debate and thinking and writing in Mahayana, because if there's no self, then what about karma? How is karma carried on from lifetime to lifetime or moment to moment? And so he said there was a lot of mental gymnastics going on, and this resulted in, well, there's a conventional self and then there's the ultimate self. And he thinks all that was just unneeded. How's that for you, my Mahayana friends? I tend to. This is my, you know, the seeing into complexity. To be with my tendency to do an overlay on something. You know, it keeps it alive. So being alive to, well, the it is-ing and the it is not-ing, right? As that's happening. And being alive to the selfing. Let's use that word. I think selfing works here. Or does anybody have any objections to that? Does selfing work for you? Mr. Philosopher, does it work for you? Okay. sage old Giroux, does it work for you?
My friends call me a contrarian, but I beg to differ.
Okay. And how do you differ?
Being a contrarian?
Are you begging to differ with selfing?
No. I was pitching out that if I'm contrarian, I just, you know, my friends think of me as a self. And they say, I'm a contrarian, but I beg to differ. I'm just a...
That's a good point. That's a good point. Thank you.
Just playing with the words, I guess.
Thank you. Thank you. That could be your house, right? Part of your house?
Oh, yeah.
So if they call you a contrarian and you take that on, then that becomes part of your house, right?
Yeah, it could be a big room. Huh?
Yeah. And it just happens like that. So, you know, the practice becomes, as we're alive in the selfing, is to understand how the selfing happens. Okay, well, we'll be getting into that tomorrow, but how does the selfing happen? And we can be alive to that. And so this afternoon, what I'm going to encourage us to do is, you know, break into pairs or triads, whatever, and talk about your houses. What are your houses? How do you see your house? Is that really who you are? How did that house come to be? You know, my language is going to get a little salty here, if you don't mind. Anybody got a problem with salty? For instance, I'm going to do a little self-divulging. When I was a kid, one of my mother's favorite appellations for me, her favorite nicknames, was lardass. Now you can imagine what kind of house that leads to. And so I give this example because that's how our house, that's where our house starts. So when you're thinking of your house this afternoon or before this afternoon, think about that. What did you hear as a child about you? What kind of mannerisms responded to you? Was there close attentiveness or get out of here, kid? Think about that. That's all elements of your house, right? Did you have anything to do with that? Was there a you in there making the house, or was this dynamic happening that created the sense of you, that created the sense of you? And then we can, you know, we can go on. We go on. We go to school, right? What happened at school? How did the teachers respond to us, treat us? Were we different from the other kids? How did that happen? Then what happened if we were different from other kids? You know, we see this. And then this sets up the dynamics of you-ing, perpetuating something, storylines, narratives. So for instance, when you're sitting, or you're going about, you know, this is just a wonderful, you know, sashins are a wonderful opportunity for this, because it just gives, there's so much quiet and so much time for all this stuff to come up. So you're maybe doing some work, whatever. You know, notice what's coming up. Notice the overlay that comes up. very subtle. You'll be doing something and this, all of a sudden you're in some narrative. And that narrative, I'm pretty sure, is reinforcing some idea about you. It generally does. You know, well, why am I doing this? Why do they want me to do this? Why do I have to do it this way? I want it to be another way. I think they should do this. Probably more subtle than that. So notice that. Notice that we'll be exploring. I'll be inviting you to explore being in the complexity and to see what comes up, these narratives as they come up, and then notice. Then notice what happens in response to that. Notice when there's this selfing going on. Notice what happens with your perspective. Does it become narrow? Does it harden? Notice what emotions are there, too. Causes and conditions. This arising, that arising. This ceases, that ceases. Notice, very simply, if you're in a hard and fast narrative about something, notice that. Notice what it feels like. Just notice that. Oh, you know, oh. There's an energy to it. We'll be talking about that, too. There's an energy to it. You feel it. The emotional. There's chemical reaction going on with the emotions in the body. You feel it. And then this has been my experience, is when I turn into the somatic, the physical awareness of it, very often there's a shift, because immediately I'm coming out of the narrative. I'm not pushing anything away. I'm just turning in, and it falls away. It breaks apart. And then you notice what that feels like when the grip of something releases. Notice that. It's going on all the time, you know. It was happening when I was sitting this morning. I felt the body constricting and seeing where it was taking me. I go, oh, okay. There's this opening that happens. Notice, too, in this house building project, right, we're very selective about what we let in about ourselves, what we let in, period. So, we're sitting. Causes and conditions. This arising, that arising. This ceasing, that ceases. Right? A whole host of things can come in, right? I've robbed a few banks over the time. You know, and the older I get, some really weird stuff about that dark side happens. I go, wow. But you know, the impulse is to push that away, right? Right? Because why? Why do we push that away?
Scary. It doesn't fit our narrative.
Yeah. We're not supposed to be that way, right? Yeah. That's a very powerful thing. We're not supposed to be that way. So what happens is a lot of us gets pushed down, repressed. It goes into what is called our shadow side. I mean, we can think about, you know, when we think about it, when all that's happening, what about this sense of self? What about this self? It's kind of, that house is kind of really not too stable anyway, right? So it's being awake in the complexity, seeing what's coming up, see the dynamic of selfing, and then we're with it, and we can be in the grips of selfing, and then it releases very simply. We don't make it happen. If we're making it happen, we're using our mind to study the mind. How are we doing for time?
Yeah, just wanted to let you know we have about 3 minutes left.
3 minutes? Okay. Thank you. But then there's... So I'll close with this, because I've been reading. I'm a therapist, and I'm interested in various modalities, and so I read about things, okay, I read about what's happening in the psychedelic world, I read about these things going on with ayahuasca, and I'm reading about these well-known people, the buzzword now is ego death. Right? Ego death. So it sounds like, no self, But ultimately, what this practice is about, according to the Buddha, according to Stephen Batchelor, and I think according to Dogen, is flourishing. How do we flourish? We need a solid sense of self. In fact, when we talk about the ego, getting rid of the ego, the ego is, well, this is from the Cleveland Clinic, so it's a pretty reputable source. The ego is part of your personality that helps you make practical, rational decisions. It acts as a middle ground, balancing your instincts and desires with your morals and conscience. So it's important. So it's not an either-or thing, right? It's how we work, and this is Dogen. This is Dogen, and it's a Buddha. It's how we work with everything that comes into play in our experience and make our way. The image of middle ground in an interview, an inner book, A Fire Runs Through All Things, Susan Murphy, she talks about the rapids, talking in her conversation with a rapids expert. And he says, if you focus on the rocks, you're in trouble. Anybody done whitewater? I have. And you do. The fear sets in, and thank God I wasn't the one navigating, but the fear sets in and your vision gets very tight. He says, if you focus, you want to focus on the way through. For me, that's a good description of the middle way. And when we think about the rocks, what are the rocks? Our creation? A little while ago, I was making a rock out of Ross. You see how that starts happening here? How that skews our navigation? Of not being able, I'm stuck on the rocks, it is or is not, it is not, and I'm not in the complexity. Did I get in time?
Perfect.
Briefly, any questions? Yes.
You mentioned the Pali Canon. That's pre-Buddhist stuff, right?
It's pre what?
Pre-Buddhist.
It's
text.
The Pali Canon is. It came about because, it's pre-Mahayana.
Yeah.
Okay. And it came about because after the Buddha died, nothing had been written down. So they corralled his cousin and attendant Ananda because he had such phenomenal memory, and they started taking down. And then it, you know, and then the, you know, the, then what happened of it, you know, happened with it, you know, as people remembered, but they started adding their stuff in too, which you know, Batchelor talks about, you know, discerning. But what did the Buddha, what was it really possible that the Buddha said, and what probably wasn't? What was somebody else's agenda? So it goes back there, and I'm just finding clarity. You know, it's very simple. When we think about attachment and aversion, craving and aversion, and then we chant Shin Ching Ming, and it's all through there.
There was something that you said that reminded me of a kind of a distillation that came from the Pali Canon. It's pain is mandatory, suffering is optional. It sounds like something you said reminded me of that.
Yeah. We'll get into that tomorrow.
Because that has to do with the self, too?
Mm-hmm.
With the selfing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.